Who rode their jetpack here? No. Yeah, good. All right. In the very near future, you can all do this. This is the first guy who jetpacks in the Bay Area. I believed, and a lot of us believed, that the future was going to be lightweight. It was going to hover. It was going to be shiny. It was going to be fast. And we need that type of sort of strange optimism for artists and designers to give a suggestion of what might be possible before it actually happens.
I've got another business idea.
Okay, what is that?
What's this?
That is a skateboard. No, it is a toothbrush. No. What is it?
Quiet, Brian. What is it? We'll tell you what it is.
Oh.
It's a hoverboard.
I don't understand what you mean.
It's a hoverboard, as you've seen Back to the Future. As you've seen the bit where they jump on the board and it flies around.
Yeah.
It's in the future.
Yeah.
That film must have been about 10 years ago. No one has even thought about making that thing.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't do it yet. That's where you lot come in. You come up with the science.
We don't do that. This is nothing. It's a film.
Well, it's they must have used the board from somewhere. They made one of them that worked. So how did you jump on it and fly all around? Because all the chases then.
It's called special effects. How do they do anything in a movie?
Good luck. You gonna put on the bra before you shake my hand? Good luck, man.
I didn't realize all that part was on there. Before that, he tried to pitch Donald Trump this idea of a glove to eat ice cream with so that the hoverboard didn't fly, but he believed that it would. And there's a little bit in there when he talks about the technology that comes in that makes it possible. So before it's possible, we need someone to imagine what it's going to look like, and that's my great belief. This is probably more approximate accurate vision of the future. These are photographs by Dorothea Lange from the 30s of the future. It's the Dust Bowl. It's 1929, 1930, and the future looks bleak. But for the most part, we love to entertain visions of the future where that light fastness that hovers, that allows us as some kind of super creature to hover above the surface of the Earth. There it is. Do you like that? I made it come up really, really slowly. Because the future isn't always fast. Whoa. All right, so this is one of my students, a fourth grader. This is like 2 weeks ago. But I could see myself having drawn this when I was a kid, which wasn't 2 weeks ago. But we're always going to believe that it's going to hover, and somehow someone's going to figure it out, and that's up to the rest of you. The wonderful thing about the projective imagination of the artist are visions like this. This is a drawing by Hugh Ferris, who I think might have been trained as an architect, but he did architectural renderings for developers to pitch ideas that weren't yet possible, but were sort of seductive visions. They were drawn with charcoal. And if you think of either the Guardian Building downtown in Detroit or the Chrysler Building, you can see that Hugh Ferris's drawings 20, 30 years before those buildings were built started to approximate what the world would look like in some ways. And I believe that once you put that idea out there that something is possible, it starts to become a reality even long before it's figured out. These are habitable bridges, which I think are beautiful ideas. This is from Fritz Lang's still from Metropolis in 1927. And at the time that this film was built, we didn't have places that looked like this. But look at most downtown cities that have a crappy climate. And you'll see skyways that are not the future, they're dreary. They've got stained carpet and stale smoke in there, and someone can't wait to get out. But in 1927, this sort of vision of a dystopian future was something that was more the part of science fiction. This is what I should have worn here tonight. I think these guys look like wonderful baked potatoes about to go in, but so many of the things that drive visions of the future start with this sense of possibility, and then they start to get more and more competitive. So if you think of the US space missions as both the places where we were trying to better the Soviets, but as well as to find another frontier, whether it's through the material that exists in these protective suits or the nose cones of those rockets, that so many of the innovations that we have that end up making us fly faster, farther, or lighter come from the combination of the artistic imagination and technological innovation. And it basically, if you look at any of the things that parallel the space race, you'll see that, say, the 1958 Cadillac tail fins that were supposed to look like the tail fins on a rocket, so many of those things filter into our popular imagination. So while it might be someone dreaming at a drafting board of people flying into space, that filters in through, and we start thinking more and more about that in our everyday lives. Does anyone live in a house like this before I mock it in some small way? This is called the Chemisphere. It was designed by a Finnish architect, Matthias Irronen, 1967. And it was part of the same early optimism that propelled people to get into suits that looked like baked potatoes or Orville Redenbacher's microwave popcorn and go into a place they'd never been far up in the sky. But in that same interest in being light and being self-contained, because the future was going to look more like those Dorothea Lange photos of a bleak Earth with little water and poor natural resources, so many of the things that we started designing emphasized that sort of cocoon, that these were houses that looked like spaceships. These were things that looked like they were dwelling lightly on the Earth because the Earth might not last, and they were enclosed in a way that enabled us to pick up and lift off at any time. This is by the English architect John Lautner. If any of you saw the Woody Allen movie Sleeper, where the orgasmatron figures prominently, this is the house. It was never completed by its original owners, built in California. It was for sale recently, but it's also supposed to evoke something that was just landing and possibly about to take off. Think how differently your house might be if you think it's about to take off. Every day when I look at my basement, I hope it's going to take off because I don't want to clean that. In that optimistic drive, there's what I'm starting to hint at is kind of this pessimism and utopia, that dystopia, that the future is not going to be the way that we want it to be, and we're not going to live the way that we want to live. But that if we can design around it, we can anticipate some trouble. So along with some optimism comes some things that are fantastic, and the flip side of that fantastic edge is something that's a little scary sometimes. This is by an English collective called Archigram that proposed these pop-up cities that could open and close. These were borrowed from stages that I think even the Rolling Stones and some of their early concerts used. So easy sort of, you know, basically circus or carnival technology that could set up a temporary city and covered it by a plastic dome that would keep out the nastiness. Archigram was an English parallel to the sort of American architect, inventor, engineer, artist, tinkerer, genius, Buckminster Fuller, who designed the Dymaxion car, which I think you can see one at the Henry Ford Museum. Dymaxion car could reach speeds of up to 120 miles an hour, but since it only had three wheels, it would tip over when it went around corners, so it didn't go so well. But you need people like Buckminster Fuller to believe that we should be able to reach those speeds and we should have higher fuel efficiency before the auto industry tamps it down. Think of how far ahead of that time this was. This is probably about 1954. And in that same sort of swirl of enthusiasm that was designing the space shuttles and rockets and explorations, there were so many advancements in material being developed. This is Werner Panton's Panton chair. That's a injection molded plastic that at the time was an amazing bit of technology that could produce a chair this way. If you think about those horrifying dollar store chairs, the green ones or the white ones that you all have cracked in your backyards, you recognize that injection molding plastic, although in 1967 was ahead of the curve, it's now become one of our biggest landfill problems. Werner Panton was also sort of heavily invested in overlapped with the fashion industry that took some of their space age questions in some of the same ways that those spaceships did. So on the far, whatever the, right, thank you, yeah. This is a frock by Courrèges from 1965 and Yves Saint Laurent next to that. Look at those gigantic sunglasses, which have come back in the last 5 years, but they start to do some of the same things that the astronauts did in their helmets, namely to protect the wearer from the outside. And in that protection, it's both a protection from hostile elements as well as a way to keep everything to yourself. I should have put this in the same. This is Archigram. I like, if you look closely, this guy's got a great sort of mid-60s mod look with a sort of Beatles haircut and a big mustache. This thing is called the Cushicle. It's an inflatable sort of groovy chamber. So you could set it up in the middle of London, strip down to your underwear, and have a friend photograph you. But this is, at the same time, thinking of some of the sort of hedonistic pleasures that come along with being able to keep yourself insulated from the world. Werner Panton, who designed that chair, designed a lot of interiors for nightclubs, and it involved, I would imagine, some type of hallucinatory experiences and mind-altering substances, all in these soft, cushy rooms that were isolated from the outside world. So maybe in ways not unlike, I don't know, this place or a casino, where you want to be as surrounded by the sensory pleasures of what you can control and keeping the outside at bay. A blurry slide of an amazing Joe Colombo telescoping apartment where everything could compress into under 200 square feet. But your apartment was not unlike, say, a tiny house that it could telescope and you could pick it up and put it in a truck. The refrigerating system and the stove could just hook up to a sort of a plug-and-play utility system. But there were also sort of plastic laminates, beautifully built. But in a way, it suggested that the people who were using them were transient, that although this was set up in this loft in Milan for the photo shoot, it could easily go to New York the next week. Along with the sort of fashion examples from Courrèges and Yves Saint Laurent, I wanted to show you this is an Austrian architect fashion collective called House Rucker. It's the name of the collective, and this is the Superfly helmet that would allow you to look at this, listen to music, keep yourself fashionable, and keep yourself shielded from any dust particles that might come by. They're all sort of amazing looking, but if you pause and think, everybody is by themselves, and everything that we've designed up until this point has enabled us to be by ourselves. And if in a future where we're all by ourselves, well, one, we wouldn't have the joy of each other's company, hearing each other laugh, and whatever that guy just did over there. This is Iiro Aarnio, another Finnish architect. If you've ever been to Finland in the winter, you know that there are two ways to get out of it. One is the sauna, and one is vodka. But thinking about the future, I know friends of mine had, when I was growing up, had these hanging bamboo chairs, but these were the ultimate, these hanging plexiglass partial orbs. You can see this is pre-iPod, but here's mother and daughter not relating to one another very well, but suspended in space. So their furniture is literally not touching the ground, and they're surrounded in this in sort of plexiglass part bubble in a way that they're off the earth. I think probably along that spectrum, some of the scariest but most provocative work comes from Japanese architect and roboticist Kenji Inobi, who makes these escape pod suits. This is outside the Fukushima reactor. This is 2005, so it was before there was a question about its stability. But these are built as provocations. So although they suggest that they can protect you in the event of a disaster, they may or may not be made out of anything more than like a latex dishwashing glove. I look back at that Iiro Aarnio photo, which is 1971, of the mother and daughter sitting quietly, hovering above the earth, not potentially relating to each other. And not too much later, we have incorporated much of that same behavior into our daily lives voluntarily. And we do so in some ways as a sort of a badge of privilege, whether it's the privilege of owning the device or being able to listen to your own music at any time all by yourselves. I wonder some of the assumptions that we've made from the future and some of that early optimism of voyaging into distant lands or hovering above the earth, what it's done to us. But all is not lost, because it's going to be really fun to hover, but we're going to do it together. So here's some of my prescriptions for designing a future that is connected and futuristic. know other people, not a bad thing, and not just on Facebook. But that if we rely on each other rather than assuming that we can be isolated, we'll be really well prepared to face challenges together creatively. Buckminster Fuller wouldn't have existed on his own had he not spent time at Black Mountain College in North Carolina, where the co-presence of people who were interested in thinking about lightweight materials coincided to make structures like the geodesic dome, the foundational structure here, the tensegrity model, which is tension over regular intervals, creates integral structures. You could build these big freeform structures that have no need for much internal space. And these were developed from his own experience in the military. So they can be lifted by helicopter to provide temporary housing. They're lightweight and portable, strong. And he did propose them for things that are eerily anticipate a future where we need them. In 1952, he did this rendering of Manhattan under a glass dome long before September 11th. And in the same year, way before we thought of anything like a biosphere, he suggested that the geodesic domes could be floated off into hostile territory above the Earth's surface that was no longer fit for human habitation. In that same interest of light spaces, think of all the things that we could do if we use less material. It was one of the geniuses of Buckminster Fuller. This is a Spanish designer, Martin Cruz, who, using the material that's made for those runner's blankets that you get after a 5K, a marathon, whatever. This is it in his pocket right here. He can just shake it out and create temporary or slightly longer dwelling through a really lightweight structure. And in that lightness, think of how much less we tax the earth that we live on. So the lightness isn't all lost in trying to escape, but it's thinking how we can live lightly on our land. This is Elena Morpurgo, who's a fashion design student in Milan, who recognize that so many of the things that we do with our fast fashion, including shoes, depends on disposability. She created these shoes where the uppers and the lowers are separable. So if you have a problem with your sole, I didn't mean that metaphysically, I meant with your shoes. But if you have a problem with your sole, you can replace it easily and you can learn to stitch it. And the more you can learn together to do things on your own, the better off you'll be and they don't have to go into a landfill. I think they're a fantastic idea. And it uses some of the simplest technology and simple material. There they are. You get the whole kit. You get the two uppers, two soles, ha ha ha, and the laces. In 1977, English artist David Nash started to grow this project that will really take form after he dies. And when I look at, when I talk to my children about the future, I think, I'd like to think that there's a time after we all die that the earth continues. And in some ways, we can help shape it, but not in the future where we're trying to escape it, but we're stewards of it. So David Nash started training these ash trees in 1977 to grow into a dome. Here it is, the first year of growth. This is about 15 years later. And if you look at photos as it grows, it continues. So by nourishing the earth and thinking of it as our role as artists and designers is to design a future in which we are connected to the past through our root systems, and we think about the future as we grow a protective dome over our heads, I think is sort of a wonderful counterpoint to some of those things that seem more escapist. I'm pretty sure that in order to thrive as creative sorts, we have to live in an and also world. It's not an either or proposition, either technology or nature. To live recognizing that they work, that we can work in a much more comprehensive way than trying to escape. Just put together a few images of these seed bombs that I found in a vending machine in Pittsburgh. It's just dirt with some seeds crammed into it, and it's a quarter. My father-in-law said, "You're paying a quarter for a clump of dirt with seeds crammed into it? Here, I'll give you a quarter, and you can go dig." But all these seeds are connected to this incredible geotagging system. So wherever you think you can turn a vacant lot, a plot of land that had been something that was sucking exhaust into a garden, you can enter it into a system and then more and more people can participate in it. And I think it's a wonderful connection between seemingly ancient technology and the need to nurture something and grow and the future. So know one another. Everybody in here probably has something that they can do that they can teach someone else, whether it's to repair your shoes or to make a seed bomb. And if you can share that with someone, whether you put it on YouTube or Instructables.com, we become a lot richer. I think one of the scariest things about all those individual propositions, whether you're in your own jetpack or hovering above the earth in your chemisphere, is that we're all relying on just ourselves. So I looked up how to make a hoverboard. They can't really do it yet. But there are a lot of people who are trying. And the more we can share those attempts to try, the better off we'll be. So I have one last thing for everybody. If you would stand up, please. And before you close your eyes, you have to go like this. Okay, now close your eyes. Okay, and when I say three, one, someone open their eyes. Two, we're gonna jump when I say three. One, two, three, jump. Everybody hovered right there, all together. Thank you very much.